This melon is for
display purpose only. What is this melon for?
It is for display purpose only. Season 5, episode 22. Welcome to Lug Radio.
Welcome to Lug Radio. Yes, it's the last show.
It's the last show.
The last ordinary show.
And then Lug Radio Live, a completely different entity, next weekend.
Yeah, it's the last ordinary show, and I'll convince you of this, and you'll come around at the end of the show. But anyway, it is the last ordinary episode of Lug Radio. I'm John O'Bacon.
I'm Stuart Langridge.
I'm Adam Sweet.
I'm Chris Proctor.
And we're not Hash Lug Radio. Welcome to Lug Radio.
Who else are we not?
The Linux Link Tech Show, the Linux Action Show, and Rich.
Disappointingly. I'm going to say, I must confess, we always said right from the beginning, yeah, Lug Radio is not about making money or anything, it's about just us talking about what we'll be talking about anyway, but it would have been nice to make some money out of the bloody thing.
It was quite
4 years in.
It was quite
for the love.
It was quite epically not about making money.
Well, I'm going to say, Chris, if we're in it for the love, we didn't get a lot of that either.
No, I'm going to say pretty short on the love front as well, to be honest with you, apart from the two of you, obviously.
I met Jenny before the show. I never got any love afterwards.
We did.
Harsh.
Thank you.
That's deeply, deeply harsh.
Well, she kept giving me biscuits.
No, that's Adam's mum.
Sorry, I'm missing mixing them up.
I'm fucking speechless at the
moment. So anyway,
you're fucking my mum, right, and my girlfriend.
What are we going to talk about?
We're going to talk
when we get into trouble, by the way. This is why segments like this are why
we're going to talk on today's show about the kind of the way information has become more easily accessible and whether that's a good thing. You know, we think people like Google being able to make mapping data and stuff like that available and find out where people live. So is that a good thing or a bad thing? We will discuss.
I've only got 140 characters to say. We're going to talk about Twitter.
We're going to discuss whether pundits should just fuck off, whether we're pundits, and whether we should just fuck off, which is pretty ironic, really.
Matthew P. Revel, what else are we talking about?
I'm a little bit tall for Matt.
He's Chris P. Bacon.
I don't know. I'd say you're his type.
Very good.
Thank you.
That was actually quite swift. You've got to get one good joke in 4 years of recording.
We have many, 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 many emails, and we've done a ton of boil them all down to a few dozens.
I've got to point out, right, in advance of the email segment, someone emailed in to say one of their favourite episodes of the show was the bit where I was going on about the amalgamated Bournemouth, bursting upon Trent, Thames and Portsmouth lug, the butt plug. We never mentioned that, so I thought I'd bring it up now.
You're determined to get as much juice out of that joke.
Plank.
The butt plug. Yeah, so funny, I told it twice.
Excellent. What? And also, we've got Laura and Tony here filming the show. Say hello, guys.
We have talked a lot. No, say hello, louder.
Hello.
Louder.
Hello.
That was Tony and Laura. Not necessarily in that order. we talked for ages. People said, you should video the show, and we just never got around to it. Didn't we video it once?
We set it up on my washing machine up there once. And then, like many Lug Radio endeavours, nothing really happened with it.
I imagine it's a lot of swearing and just the tops of people's heads or something.
Well, we were worrying about, we're stopping the show and everything, and we thought, well, kind of the popularity is waning. No one cares about the show anymore. So we're actually thinking about releasing a sex tape. It worked for Paris Hilton. So, but,
absolutely.
Ack was going to be the socket side of the partnership.
The socket side of the partnership.
Adam was going to be the...
people who are just listening to this and aren't seeing the video missed the bit where we had to make Adam sit on a box earlier to get him into shot.
Sadly, I have to admit, I did actually have to change chairs. Otherwise, you only just saw my hair.
It was a terrible, terrible crisis for short people everywhere.
But even when he was sat very low down, he was still one of the crew.
He was going to help pay for the pizza earlier, but it turned out he was a bit short. But I'm
fucking short and sweet. So, okay. Welcome to 1001 Joke Book. We're going to carry on, shall we?
Yep, let's get on with the show. There is a Lug Radio tradition among the four of us when we're trying to work out what goes on the show, where we'll think up a segment, Jono will hate it, then we'll give it a stupid name, and then he'll do it. You may have noticed over the last 100 or so
this
shows.
This is true, unfortunately.
Ooh, testy.
A couple of things. Exactly. Jono's interesting proposed segment about unit tests was no good until it was proposed to call it Ooh, testy, at which point he was all over the idea and we refused. Anyway, we've been wanting to talk about pundits for a while, whether they provide a valuable service to the community, to the world, whatever. And we never got anywhere with it until we decided to call it Why Don't Pundits Fuck Off? Are We Pundits? Why Don't We Fuck Off?
Now, here's the data point.
Yep. Well, no, the interesting point about this is now we are fucking off. we can talk about this.
Yeah.
That's not answered the question, though.
Yeah. Are we pundits?
Are we pundits? Should we fuck off?
Yes. I think the key point is Why Don't Pundits Fuck Off?
Well, the first question is, are we pundits?
Yes. Essentially, we talk about stuff where we have a working or little knowledge of it, so we're not experts in the area, but we give opinions on big picture stuff anyway. That makes us pundits, by definition.
Now, how would we define a pundit? Because in my mind, a pundit is somebody who kind of wants to sound authoritative on the subject. Whereas I don't necessarily think that we try to sound authoritative on the subject.
So you're starting with a deliberately pejorative description of them.
In a nutshell, yes.
So someone who is actually authoritative about a subject isn't a pundit.
No, I'd say no. I'd say that's an advisor. A pundit is somebody who is typically in the business of sounding authoritative about a subject with not necessarily being a member of that.
I think... Yeah, by not offering any direct input into the projects that they're particularly talking about, I think.
It should be noted, incidentally, in this segment that we've come to a gentleman's agreement that we're not going to name pundits. Because we think it's a bit rough.
Not going
to
name and shame people.
This segment is deliberately starting out from a bit of a negative perspective.
A little bit, perhaps, yes, you know. So you're essentially saying that your complaint is with people who... pontificate about a subject without a great deal of knowledge.
Yeah, now
we could be backing ourselves into a bit of a corner here.
Well, I'd like to actually call out one specific pundit, and that's at one point, and that's myself. Because for a while, particularly when I was writing my O'Reilly blog, I kind of was seduced by the concept of punditry, and then after a little while, I kind of thought, well, it's not really adding any particular value to the world, is it? Like, going on there and writing these long, drawn-out, intellectualised arguments about stuff. That's part of the reason why my view of pundits has changed a little bit, is that I don't think they necessarily...
The benefit the pundits bring is they because they don't know the subject intimately, they are able to step back and see it from a bit more distance and add a bit more...
I don't think there's anything wrong with asking questions.
I think, talking about kind of because you don't know the nitty gritty of why something doesn't work in a particular way, you can step back and say, "Is this not wrong?" You know,
it's that to me is not the issue. The issue is when someone's trying to sound authoritative on, I should be listened to because of who I am, kind of thing. Like, to me, punditry is kind of crosses over any boundaries of any particular reputation. So, for example, a good example, right, in the GNOME community, you know, with Guadalupe happening recently. On a lot of our minds, right? Havoc Pennington, well-renowned, right? Yeah. Now, he's not as actively involved in GNOME upstream as he used to be, as far as I'm aware. I don't know what he's doing with Little, okay? Yeah. But he's well-respected in that area. But Havoc wouldn't go and write a long, rambling blog entry about how, as an example, I don't know, something to do with the web is working, right? Like the semantic web, as an example. He wouldn't necessarily say, you know, because of my reputation, because of who I am, you should listen to me and this is how it works.
So the problem is not people writing about it, it's people expecting that they'll be listened to, even though they don't know anything about the subject, just because of who they are.
Now, that's...
I think you're denying people the right to have opinions, right?
Yeah. Anyone's got the right to have an opinion, but what I'm saying
they're just not allowed to tell anyone about it.
No, anybody's got the right
unless
to have...
Unless they're an expert.
Anybody's got the right to have an opinion, but I'm just... It's like, I'm just wondering whether people should... You know, it's fine if people want to do this. I have a certain amount of cynicism about it. That doesn't mean that other people shouldn't be able to listen to these people.
See, I think it's valuable, not Chris's point about how taking an outsider view of the thing is important, but to me, the most important point is that the people I read who are pundits, even by your definition, Jono, the skill they bring to it is that of writing. Whereas experts in the project, whatever these different projects are not necessarily experts in writing about it, in communicating about the project. That's a genuine skill that's in true. Itself, which people maybe have don't have. I mean, that's
true. Doesn't blog about these things because he can't lie.
But well, no, I mean, yeah, I mean, one of the reasons that I mean, Havoc's take your example of Havoc, he was well respected because of all the code he wrote and things. But a lot of what he did was. A lot of what he did that got him noticed was articulate himself very well. Yeah, so I was having difficulty articulating myself there. But yes,
I'm very meta.
Yeah, isn't it? Very. But that's the point. Being able to write about a problem can deliver new perspectives on it that you wouldn't necessarily get from someone who's actually involved.
I guess a lot of it depends on how you classify a pundit. So, for example, if Havoc was to... Havoc perused about online desktops, right?
Yeah.
And I don't put Havoc into the category of a pundit, you know, because... I don't know what my criteria is, but he doesn't really satisfy the criteria for being a pundit. Because I guess it's probably because he's well respected in that thing. And if Havoc was to, as a regularity, write about a wide variety of diverse subjects and propose ways in which things should work and try and sound authoritative, I guess I might put him more into the category of a pundit.
For me, the issue is really how you break down what a pundit is. I think the example that we were talking about when we were discussing this segment was a particular scenario when one kind of master of his field posted something, or his company did something, I forget exactly, and then another kind of master of his field posted a thing in response to this, and unfortunately for him, as he later acknowledged, he was factually inaccurate. And then somebody else, a third party, came along, and rather than kind of say what you do is being an advocate, he was basically just commentating and essentially fanned the flames of the inaccuracy, which into the wider world looked like a bit of a blow up. And where that actually wasn't the case, and the two guys that made the original post agreed and counter-argued and came to a conclusion.
That's way too generic, that names on it. But
well, yeah.
I don't have to name a name, because I read Twingely, as Twingely's blog, and Twingely's stuff, and I think it's quite interesting. Not necessarily because he's right, because most of the time he isn't, but because he kind of takes this view of all these different things that happen in the IT world and trying to draw them together into... a completely spurious theory, but it's the fact that he does that, and it makes you think. Kind of the thing, this is the benefit he's bringing. It's not that he's right; it's just he's making you think about how different things tie together.
The thing I think is interesting about Cringely, because I mean, it's interesting because all of these, thinking about it, each of these different people that we typically associate as being pundits are actually very, very different in their own categories.
That's true.
And I guess a lot of it is how convincing that person sounds, because Cringely to me, he's a pundit, but he's a fairly convincing pundit. Because Cringely's actually been relatively right about a lot of stuff. And another person who's a bit like that, I'd say, is Joel Spolsky. Like, if we're talking about good pundits.
Yeah.
Joel Spolsky's remarkably switched on. And Cringely is an interesting guy to a large degree. I mean, a lot of the stuff... I don't tend to read his stuff so much because I just don't have time to read it. Because, he writes a lot and he writes very regularly. And, but I guess the thing is to me, it's like when some people, and it's probably a very, very small amount of people, who... are basically out there to sound convincing about a subject and to sound authoritative about a subject because of them having a reputation in other areas. Like, everybody who's a pundit has got a reputation for something. People don't come from nowhere and talk about stuff. And, you know, it's not as if these people are just randoms who've never achieved anything. But I think it's when someone's, let's say using Havoc as an example, let's say he did have a significant amount of achievement in the GNOME desktop, and then he decided that he was going to, instead of actually working on specific things and achieving certain things in different projects, he was going to throw all that away and turn his life to utilizing his previous reputation to gain respect in other parts of the world, where there's not necessarily any reasoning for that. And I think that's my slight cynicism, is that some people can do that. Some people just cross across the board, and some people sound convincing and they can bring that kind of knowledge all over the place. But some people, I'm not entirely sure they can.
So somebody who's, say, bringing their reputation as a community manager for leading a Linux distribution.
I absolutely don't fall into the category as being believable in various things. If I was to go and rant and rave about, you know, programming, or rant and rave about
Welcome to Lograde,
web stuff, you know.
I guess
I don't classify us as pundits. I classify us more as journalists.
I guess for me, really, the big issue about whether you should fuck off or not is whether your impact, obviously, is positive or negative. And the case scenario I was talking about, the end product was negative. Yeah, I think generally, you as an advocate or you as a community manager, your impact, many would disagree, but your impact is generally positive.
Right.
The problem
right.
with that, though, is that how do you judge whether, yeah, if you write a piece of punditry, how are you going to judge whether the impact of that is positive or negative until you've actually put it out there and had the effect, in which case you probably shouldn't have done it. You know?
Which is exactly kind of like which is exactly the point. In exactly the same way, if I were to start writing about something I don't particularly know a lot about at the moment, then I wouldn't be authoritative about that at that point. But I've got to do the writing and get involved in order to become authoritative. So you've got a chicken and egg problem.
Alternatively, you actually do something to do with that subject to get authoritative.
Why? What? Why?
Because it's a meritocracy.
Why should
it's
you?
The way,
ha- why
this is the way open source works. You may be familiar with it.
No, it isn't.
Clearly not.
No, it isn't.
Though. It is a meritocracy.
No, it just isn't, though. Right? That's the whole point of writing about things. We've been 105 shows talking about things in which we're not experts because the opinions of people who are new to a subject are in themselves interesting.
But the reason why I don't put us in the category of pundits is that we're not going out there to tell people that our opinion is right. All we're doing is we're having a conversation.
Neither's anybody else.
To most pundits.
I disagree. I'd say that the category of a pundit is somebody who goes out there who's basically shaping their argument in such a way that they believe that they are genuinely right about a subject. Like, when we talk about stuff, we'll believe that we're right in our own. Like, if you and I have a discussion about editors, right?
Yeah.
And you're going on about G-Edit and I'm going on about Nano as an example, right? You are not saying to the entire world that you're not going to say that, you know, I'm absolutely the authority on editors. You're just expressing your opinion. In our discussion, you're claiming that you're right between you and I, but in the wider world, you're not claiming that you're right.
So your problem is not actually with pundits at all. It's just with people who are arrogant. It's got nothing to do with pundits or not. Anyone who expresses an opinion about something and doesn't acknowledge the possibility that they might be wrong, that's your problem. It's got not got anything to do with punditry.
I think that it's a case of I don't mind someone being arrogant if they know what they're talking about.
Then they're not being arrogant.
Like
then.
You, if you like,
that's not arrogance.
Yes, it is. You can if just because someone like let's use an example.
If you're actually right, it's not arrogant to say that you are right.
I don't know if I should be having a discussion about the concept of arrogance with somebody who's in himself fucking arrogant, right? Somebody who had a conversation in my sunroom and said, "Well, I don't see anything wrong with being arrogant because I'm right all the time."
Yes. If I
you are aware that that's a bad thing.
If I said that the sun exists and you said no, should I say, well, I should acknowledge the possibility of alternative opinions? Or should I say, no, I'm actually right and you are wrong?
Another classic analogy.
That's not arrogance.
Okay, Napoleon and Stalin, let's move on.
So anyway.
So
picturing him in a Napoleon hat.
I need Napoleon hat. I could tuck my hand into my shirt, but it's a t-shirt, so it doesn't work.
need a big shirt.
Okay, so back to the original question. Then you're defining pundits as people who give an opinion which they are not qualified to give, and then expect people to listen and believe it anyway. Is there anyone in the world who would not think that people like that should shut up? Does anyone think that's a good idea?
This is my point. I personally...
But there's nothing to argue about.
This is my point is that I personally think it's a bad thing, right? But a lot of people...
Who would think it's a good thing?
Well, clearly...
Don't stab people in the face for no reason. Should they be stopped?
I don't think it's a bad thing for people to have opinions on stuff they don't necessarily know a lot about and to express those opinions.
I think that...
No one's denying that. I don't necessarily have to agree with them
or read it or be interested.
The end of what Ak just said, though, is the thing is people having opinions, once again, to clarify, everyone believe that having opinions is a good thing.
Yeah.
Right? We're on fucking Lug Radio.
Yeah.
Right? We can't really deny that.
No,
okay?
Fair point.
The point is expecting other people to think that they sound authoritative and to become authoritative on the subject. That's the thing. And Ak, I completely agree with you that it's clearly a bad thing. But these people exist and people listen to them and they have an impact in the industry. That's the thing that concerns me. Like, clearly people do think that it's acceptable because these people exist. Like, if these people didn't exist, then there'd be a random guy stood on a box in London, right? Shouting out to people in Speaker's Corner, right?
Right.
Now, my point is that
not following your analogy here.
My point is that like people can go to and stand on a box anywhere in the world and have opinions and shout about them, but it doesn't necessarily mean people are going to listen to them.
Yes.
But a lot of these people are very well respected. So this is the reason why I think it's not such a good thing. Like like, it's not fair to say that anybody with an opinion or a strongly worded opinion is a pundit. Like, I wouldn't say you're a pundit. You have very strong opinions about a lot of things, but you're not a pundit.
Okay.
I'd say you're arrogant.
I would concur.
But, you know, you think that's a good thing.
I think
don't you?
The thing with you, Ak, is that you normally present your case, from technical fact, I would say. You've assessed the situation. Not always.
Are you on about the same person?
No. Admittedly, in most cases,
being abused.
I'm standing up for you here. You are outrageously opinionated. But generally, when you really argue the toss about something, particularly technically, anyway, you have looked at the options, you've assessed the situation, and you've decided clearly that this is the way forward, the right way.
Let me just turn the mic down.
Am I incredibly loud? No, it's not. You're turning Ak down.
I'm with Jono on this one.
There are so many examples, right? And I'm not going to say suggest that I'm any different, right? There's so many examples where Ak's been like, that's fucking terrible, blah 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 blah, and then actually when he looks at the details, he's like, actually, you know, like, come on, no.
See, I don't have a problem with that, though. You have a really strong opinion on something, you express it, and okay, completely wrong most of the time.
But that's
I used to say this, and now I think I'm wrong.
And that's the thing. I don't have anything wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with having an opinion and learning about it and refining your viewpoint.
In that particular case, if you take Mono as the case, then I think your worries were perfectly justified at the time.
But the difference is, and this is the key point, is that Ak, at no point through those discussions about Mono, I don't believe that at any point you tried to say, this is my opinion, I believe that people should respect me for my opinion because of who I am. You didn't do that. You just expressed your opinion on a radio show, right? And that's what makes you not a pundit.
Okay, I mean, we've considerably narrowed the definition of pundit from what I think people would have thought we were talking about when we started here. This is the point. So we've narrowed it down to
you.
A bunch of people.
One
who,
guy.
We've narrowed down punditry to speaking authoritatively about things on the record and expecting people to listen, even though you don't have the requisite authority.
Yes.
Okay. Well, I think nobody thinks that that's a good thing.
But this is clear that some people do. Otherwise, these people wouldn't have the blogs. Well,
I don't think most pundits do that.
I think that's the thing. I don't think that is a description of most pundits.
For me, this is the point that we were drilling down towards, I think. These are the people who should just fuck off. And there are people out there that are very well respected and perhaps shouldn't be.
I mean, there's some people out there who have an unnatural, and I, to a degree, put cringe in this category, who have an unnatural, you're going to hate this word, right? Get ready.
Bring it on.
Symbiotic.
Oh my God.
I know, right?
Please. I want to hear the rest of the sentence to know whether you actually know what it means.
Well, I think there's some people who have, probably a better way of describing it, some people who have like an ebb and a flow of how the IT industry works. They just seem to know how it works and how it flows, right? And they have a means of looking ahead 5 years or 10 years and really understanding how it works. And these people are rare. And they're the kind of people that you do want their opinions, you do want their perspective, and I believe that Cringely is pretty much one of them. He's wrong a lot of the time, but I think in many cases, Cringely's got a pretty switched on way of doing things. That's perfectly fine. And I'd say he's an exception as well, because he's somebody who is out and out a pundit, but his punditry, or he's a commentator rather, but he's developed a reputation because of that. I'd say that's...
So the difference between a commentator and a pundit, by your definition, is that commentators are right and pundits aren't.
No. I'd say that...
That sounds a lot... to be honest with you, if Cringely was wrong all the time, you'd think he was a pundit and you'd hate him and think he should shut up.
The only thing which saves him from the pit of doom is
that he's right sometimes.
Listen, this is what the word no means, right? No, that's not what I think. I think that the difference with Cringely is I don't think Cringely has so much of a self-righteous "you should listen to me."
Oh! Have you read any of his fucking
books? I knew you were going to disagree with that. And if your perspective is that Cringely is like, yeah, you should listen to me, this is exactly the way it's going to work,
because I'm
blah, blah,
Robert X. Cringely.
Right? Then he'd be a pundit in your category.
Yeah. The point is I don't mind it. Because I think that if people are uncritically accepting what's written down and saying, well, that's true because this person says it and they've got a reputation, then they need to develop some better critical faculties.
You know, this is
you
interesting.
You need to know how to listen to something someone said and then analyze it for whether it's likely to be right or
it's,
not.
It's interesting because in every single occurrence, like we said earlier on that this is something that's been on our ideas wiki for quite a long time, for years, right? And every single time we talk about pundits, you have a very negative view of it, and you don't seem to be expressing the same view that you've expressed off air.
To me,
you've always said, "Ah, what the fuck? You know, they just come in here and they have all this opinion, and it's completely
good lord.
Good lord, it's fucking pointless and it's useless. And where the hell do they get off talking about this kind of shit?" And admittedly, we're talking about specific cases in many situations.
Mainly because we're talking about specific cases, but we're not naming names.
Now you're hanging out with your new Web 2.0 friends. Is this part of the change? As well,
yeah, absolutely, that's what it is, yeah. Precisely, yeah.
Now you're Twittering and
I've got a Twitter account, so now all the critical faculties in my brain have gone away. That's how it works.
But in Axe's defense, when he originally evaluated Twitter, he looked into all of the technical, you know.
Oh, fuck off.
I did, and didn't like it for precisely that reason, and then sat down and actually thought, why don't I like
you know Twitter is.
But we'll talk about that later.
Yeah, we should talk about that, because that is something that is an interesting subject in itself.
Yeah, it is. I mean, I don't think I agree with you on my opinion on pundits. I think people...
Imagine my surprise!
Well, yeah. What could I tell you? I don't think it's like that.
So, I mean, to draw this to a conclusion then...
That'd be a wise idea.
Are we pundits, do you think?
I don't think so.
See, I don't think we are.
I think we should fuck off.
Yeah, well, it's funny you should say that, actually. But, I mean, I don't believe that we are pundits by the kind of loose, horribly wrong definition that we've managed to cobble together during this segment. By the fact that I don't believe, and I think most of our listeners perhaps would agree, that we don't represent our views as being authoritative, particularly on the subject.
Yeah.
We are just four guys in a room.
Sometimes we do, to be honest.
Well, yeah,
I think most of our listeners are no better than to take us seriously.
I think there's some exceptions where I think we do, but I think in those cases we're in a position where we are authoritative. Like if I'm talking about Ubuntu, or Axe talking about web stuff, you're talking about servers, or he's talking about the network block driver, right? Then
you arsehole.
Then I think that you know. We do have a level of authority.
It should be pointed out that Chris knows about other things too, I think.
Yeah.
I'm interested by the fact that you've mentioned the network block driver on the show far more than I ever have.
You've just increased your count.
I'm on to three mentions. So.
Yeah. No, I mean, he knows about LVM as well.
It's true.
So should we fuck off?
I think how about we fuck off right now?
Let's.
Twitter. Bit of a big buzz on the internet right now. I think we'd all agree.
Yeah.
Yeah. First, explain what it is for those of us who don't.
So
know.
Twitter is a website in which you can type in it's basically microblogging is what it's referred to, where you can type in 140 characters, and people typically use it to talk about what they're doing at that particular moment in time.
Okay.
Now, when I first heard about Twitter, I was a bit cynical about it. I thought, why would anyone care about someone going and buying a pint of milk or something?
You were
like
thinking, much like I am at this very moment, that it's a stealing pile of Web 2.0 micro cack.
Yeah, exactly. And that was my kind of viewpoint.
I'd just like to say the word cack again.
That's okay. Okay, fine. Would you like to talk about poo as well? Now you're 5 years old. And maybe the poo button, hey, Adam?
You're mature by my standards then, are you?
slightly off the point here, people. Back
so anyway,
to the point.
I was a bit cynical of it, and Ack was as well, and yes. I'm assuming you two guys were, right?
No, I love
I'm still
it, actually.
Cynical.
Have we run out of characters yet?
you'd be surprised, first of all, how short 140 characters is, and secondly, how good you get at compressing a thought down into 140 characters.
I have the same ability with text messages.
Why? Text messages, I think part of the reason it was limited to 140 characters originally was because SMSs back then were limited to 160 characters. Then they invented SMS 2.
No.
About four years ago.
No. If you send text messages to a lot of people in foreign countries, it'll only send one.
Because they're only SMS 1.
It's the link between, Twitter and SMS, the fact that it then SMSs all of your friends about what you're doing.
No, you can set up Twitter so it sends SMSs to you of what your friends are posting, and you can send messages to Twitter over SMS.
Anywho.
Yes, sorry.
So
We'll talk about that in a bit.
We were all kind of a bit cynical of things, and I was certainly one of them. And at UDS, Alan Pope, we were having a conversation in the pub one night, and Alan Pope was going on about how great he thinks Twitter is. And he was like saying, go on, register an account. I was like, And then he decided, being the scholarly gent that he is, to register an account in my name and start lying about what I'm doing. Things like, I'm going to bed and I'm going to dream about the community, right? All this kind of stuff, okay? So he then made me beg so I could have my identity back. Because,
You know what? There's a million people... Well, there's a million people in the world who wish they'd had that idea before he did. I wish I could have done that. I'd have come up with great stuff that you were thinking.
So anyway, I had this account and I thought, well, I'll see about using it. And I've actually, bizarrely, I found Twitter, I've referred to it earlier on as a bit of an enigma in the fact that it's one of those things that my gut feeling at the time was certainly, this is pointless Web 2.0 cack. But actually, it's quite interesting and it's useful in different ways.
It is.
And I know Axe being exactly the same.
I have. I mean, when I first saw it, I thought, oh, I can't be doing with all these people sitting there talking about all the cool stuff they've done together, whatever. And then I started, to me, it's like, you know, in newspapers, you'll get a little story about a celebrity, how they were seen in this bar. And that's not actually that interesting. You know, some minor celebrity goes to a bar, not that exciting. But it's actually interesting to read about. I don't know why I find it interesting to read about. Exactly.
It's
just
so isn't interesting.
Precisely.
I don't care.
Not entirely sure, Chris, that your viewpoints on what is interesting, what is not interesting.
I am in no way expecting other people to find it interesting. But I find it fascinating to just get this sort of drip, 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 day by day account of just what people are up to, what they're thinking about, what they're playing around with.
I mean, I can see that's interesting if they're doing something interesting or if they're thinking something kind of, you know, interesting. But if they're going, I'm known that I'm get a pint of milk, I'm dreaming of the community, don't care.
No, really. which is fine. And
this is the reason I don't have a blog, by the way. Yeah. I don't have anything interesting to, you know.
Precisely.
I don't do anything interesting, so I don't force this on people.
And you are therefore not the use case. And I agree with you. You wouldn't find it good. But I find it really interesting. In the same way that I could spend, you know, an hour just chatting to you, Chris, about what you did yesterday. And that'd be quite interesting, just to find out what you've been up to. Even though it's not interesting to the wider world or whatever.
Yeah, but it's a conversation. About it, fair enough, but 140 characters, not so much.
Jono, well, you see, that's part of the art of it. Because they're that short. Otherwise, it would just be a blog.
Did you just say part of the art of Twitter?
Yeah, I did.
A little bit of me just died.
I think it's interesting. Jono referred to it earlier as very, very, very slow IRC, which is what it is. You know, it's fascinating. I really do think
I don't think it's anywhere near as fascinating as you think it is. I mean,
no,
it's.
I agree with you. I think
the thing about it is that it's like a lot of people when they started using it were raving about it as if it was this revolutionary thing. I don't think it's that.
Well,
I think it's an entertainment medium. It's like it's something that's broadly interesting if you've got nothing to do for a few minutes.
Bear in mind, there are a couple of other things to bring up about it. The first one is that it's becoming a kind of de facto way for things to communicate across the internet without having to hook up a protocol to do it. So I use Remember the Milk to remember Task, online web application.
Being a Web 2.0 monkey.
Being a Web 2.0 monkey that I am, yeah. And then I use Task, the GNOME application, which talks to Remember the Milk, right?
Right.
Now,
did you use Basecamp as well?
No.
I thought you used Basecamp for a while.
No. I had to use it at work, but I don't like it.
But
the Remember the Milk people have set up a Twitter bot so you can send messages to your Remember the Milk account over Twitter, which in itself is not that exciting. But it now means because Twitter accepts messages over SMS, I can add tasks to my task list with SMS.
I
mean,
I see that as interesting. Yeah, it's
become a communications protocol. To be honest with you, if I wanted to set up an application that would allow people to easily access it from a mobile on the move, then to send it messages, to receive messages back, I'd just set up a Twitter bot and have it all proxied through Twitter.
That's basically forcing something that isn't really designed for that to do something useful.
It's not actually
a comment on the fact that Twitter itself
is. It's got nothing to do with Twitter, yeah. It's just the fact that you can get information from one thing to another.
The thing you're talking about, Twitter being kind of like a very, very slow IRC, I don't see it is. I mean, IRC is kind of, I write something, somebody sends something back.
And that's what happens on Twitter.
But you get that on Twitter too.
Talk.
That's what happens on Twitter. People send messages to each other.
Very much a one-way thing. It's kind of like, I put out that I'm going to buy some milk, or, you know, I'm doing something really cool.
Taking your shit.
And it just pushes it out. It's like, here's a load of information, just push it out into the web and whatever. You know?
And sometimes people will comment on it, sometimes they won't.
The one thing, though, which I mean, much as I'm trying to be understanding towards Twitter, the one thing which I find concerning, and where I do think it goes into the lands of, what's the best way of describing it? Complete fucking pointlessness. That's it. Yeah. And you're guilty of this language, is when people send
pointlessness.
is when people send Twitter messages from their mobile phone.
Now, see, I think that's precisely a good thing, because you're disconnected from being on the computer.
Why does anyone care?
If I'm sitting in front of a computer, I'm going to be writing about how I'm doing a computery thing. You know, by definition, if I'm doing something not computer involved, I'm not in front of a computer.
And why does anyone care about that, though?
I don't know. I don't know why I care
about
it.
That's like a whole special effort to tell people about buying milk.
Yes. Absolutely, and yet I find it fascinating.
If you're drinking like yak's milk, I can understand it, right?
I don't know why I find it interesting.
Go to Milk Mountain Gnu.
See, in fact, I actually find that more useful than sitting in front of the computer twittering. I
mean, precisely.
If you sit there, write a little text message saying, you know, I'm doing this, and it gets forwarded basically so all your friends can then see it. It saves you sending them all a text message individually.
Chris, you could...
If you're doing something interesting. This is the fact that you don't normally...
Jono has just written on Twitter, recording Lug Radio. Right, Chris, you can't do that at the moment.
No.
Because you're not in front of your computer. But you can, because you just send it an SMS. That's what it's for.
I can't think of anyone who cares that I'm recording.
I can see the novelty value in...
That's the thing.
I can see the novelty value in... It's just this kind of stream of somebody's consciousness every now and again. And I can see the interest in the fact that being able to do it over SMS and kind of remind yourself of things and all this kind of shit is perhaps the earliest usable foundations of the semantic web, and it's all going to be a... really cool in the next couple of years, but I think everyone's going to be bored shitless of it in 2 years.
Part of the reason I'm interested, as I say, is because of its use as a communications protocol. Whether it's been tricked up to do this, even though it wasn't originally intended to or not, I think it's a really interesting model, because there are quite a few Twitter-alikes, you know, people who've tried to do what Twitter has done. Yeah, there probably is one called Twatter, you know. But they're all missing something. You can't do it by SMS, or you can't send messages by instant messenger, or there aren't desktop clients written for them or whatever, because they don't have the critical mass. One of the interesting ones is one called Identica, which is actually open source. Right. It's Afro GPL, so it's open source, though it's a web service.
Right. You know, GPL that plays lounge music.
Yes. Afro, not Afro.
That's vision of a guy with a massive Afro.
which is interesting. One of the interesting things about that is that it allows OpenID signups. So the point about the OpenID signup is Alan Pope couldn't have signed up an account as you, because he can't use your OpenID.
Yep.
So which would have stopped that, which is nice.
I have a question, right? Mm-hmm. It was discovered early in the show that whenever he has an opinion about something, it's always from a strong technical grounding.
Just fuck off.
Your opinion's changed about Twitter. You thought it was pointless shite a while back.
Yes.
What made you change your opinion?
Two things, I think.
Shocker.
The
first thing was this kind of... it's a protocol for communication thing, which I had no idea about. I had no idea anyone had built this kind of service on top of it. And I thought that was fascinating. When I signed up to Remember the Milk to do tasks, like I said, and then noticed you could do this thing over Twitter, and I thought, oh, that's quite interesting. And then thought, but I don't like Twitter. Because I find it to be annoying. And like you say, loads of people doing microblogging, talking about how they'd been for milk and stuff. And then the second reason was I thought, well, why don't I like this? And I thought, well, it's actually quite interesting. In the same way that if you look at planets, the policy for most planet RSS aggregators, most people who set up a planet, they tend to pull every post that someone on that planet writes. Yeah. And logically, you wouldn't think that'd be the case. You'd think Planet Gnome would only have posts about Gnome on it. So everyone who's on Planet Gnome would set up a Gnome category, and Planet Gnome would only aggregate posts from their Gnome category, but it doesn't. And the reason I find Planet Gnome interesting is because you get to find out what the people who you respect as hackers, what they're doing other than just hacking
absolutely.
On Gnome.
Yeah.
And Twitter's just an extension of that. I mean, it's a
pretty big extension, though, isn't it?
No, it's not an extension of that.
Really.
Like, I mean, if you blog about something, then you write kind of, you know, 500 words or whatever. You write a significant thing saying, I'm doing this, and, yeah, I went to see Iron Maiden, and they played these tracks, and it was good because, yeah, bloody blah, and I met up with so-and-so. And you write this thing about kind of your experience. You don't just write, been to Iron Maiden. Yeah, you get more context.
No, Chris is right. I mean, it's like you get more structured. I'd say the level of quality content on a blog is a lot higher than on Twitter.
Yes, but there's
a lot more noise on Twitter.
But you actually get to find out not only what they're doing precisely in sort of technical terms, like walking down the street going to buy milk. You find context, like why are they doing it? You know?
Yeah, I understand.
How they feel about doing it and all that kind of rubbish.
I have no intention of throwing away my RSS reader in order to replace it with Twitter, right? But I think there's a lot of stuff which people do which aren't worthy of a serious, thoughtful blog post, right? I don't want to annoy Adam here, but the minutiae of people's lives, I actually, honestly, I'm not doing that to piss you off.
I nearly said the kill word then.
No, genuinely, I mean, the work in my head is relevant. I thought, that's going to annoy Adam if I say that, isn't it? But finding out that kind of thing, I think is interesting. The fact that someone spent 25 minutes being annoyed about this thing they're trying to work with, if they then solved the problem, you wouldn't ever find out that they were annoyed by it, because it's not worthy of a serious thoughtful, and you have to be much more, you have to try much harder to write up something.
I guess at that point it gets a little bit closer to being like a life recorder.
Yes,
just
exactly.
As I said, just like this kind of trickling stream of consciousness thing.
But most people's lives are just dull, frankly. And I speak as someone who doesn't blog because his life is far too dull to actually blog.
I don't think most people's lives are dull.
Without wishing to sound like some kind of starry-eyed nutcase, right? I think people's lives are full of interesting stuff, full of infinite majesty, and you just don't find out about it.
Infinite majesty. Laura just puked.
I'm sorry, but you know,
what is going on with you?
It's
right?
True.
You used to be this cantankerous English arsehole, right? And now you've become this starry-eyed, majestic Web 2.0.
He'll be joining.
Change his personality by putting on the orange.
He'll be joining the other kin next week. He'll be a fucking.
So long as there's other kin 2.0, then we'll be fine.
I must revert to the Jono way of hating everything.
That's exactly how you were. The tables used to be turned.
I agree with you, and you spent 5 years bollocking me about it.
How does it feel to be turning into each other?
Fucking horrible.
All I've got to do is go the transformation will be complete.
Back on topic, I actually think that would have been an interesting, just to go back over 5 years of Twitter to see you gradually change your opinion on things would be quite interesting.
5 years from now, I'll have a look and see how long it takes before I get
to be a cantankerous.
Of course, you wouldn't be able to use it 5 years ago because you used to love freedom.
That's why I'm using Identica.
Using what?
You see, you weren't listening earlier.
What's Identica?
The Twitter clone that's under the Afro GPL.
So actually, you don't use Twitter at all.
But it goes through the Twitter service.
Yeah,
which is closed source.
I would push from Identica to Twitter.
Right.
But then I wouldn't be able to follow people on Twitter.
Just out of curiosity, when did they open source Remember the Milk?
Never.
Ah.
Ah, what?
You still hate freedom then?
Yes.
Ba-dum-bum, it never gets old.
Yes. You're right. I hate freedom because that's because I'm pragmatic. Isn't that your word for hating freedom? Pragmatic.
Weren't we talking about this the other day on Skype?
Yes. Yes, we were.
I'm
absolutely.
Just giving you shit.
That's reasonable, actually, because you basically refuse to talk to anyone unless it's over a Skype medium now, as far as I can tell.
No.
Yes.
So you don't use SMTP, do you?
Huh?
You don't use SMTP, yeah, do you?
Isn't that true. Children's TV show with Ant and Dec?
No, that would be email. That thing that you don't use.
I believe we may have descended into randomness. When we start bringing up Ant and Dec, I think it may be time to press the magic stop button.
Maybe we should call it a day.
Right.
Oh.
Twitter message ending this segment.
End.
Well,
one of the things about the internet is obviously it makes information available really, really, really easily to a lot of people. But there's a lot of information that was kind of semi-private before, and things like voter information. Yeah, the electoral rolls in this country are publicly available, but they're really hard to get hold of. Unless you put them on the internet, and the internet has obviously made them freely available to everybody really easily. Is this a good thing, or is this...
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, there was a lot of this information, which was genuinely publicly available. If you wanted to go to the time and effort of getting it, there wasn't anything secret or restricted about it. It's just that getting hold of it was a pain in the arse. Now, because the internet makes information easy, people with this kind of info tend to just stick an Excel spreadsheet of it on their website. So the question is really, do people need to be thinking responsibly about that? Or is open access to information always and inherently a good thing?
Yeah, it kind of strikes me that, even though it was technically available beforehand, it was always the fact that it was so hard to find meant that it was a protection against most people getting it, you know, because most people aren't going to go and find that kind of information. Like, I think there's going to be a lot...
Security through obscurity.
Yeah, essentially,
which is exactly what you're describing, which is bad.
Like, it wouldn't surprise me if there's a significant number of people in this country who have no idea of the kind of information that's publicly available.
Mm-hmm.
Like, including us, right? We've probably... There's probably aspects of our lives that are available that we have... absolutely no idea about.
It's interesting that, I mean, the Americans are more used to the... There was a big shock when, you can punch someone's name into Google, it'll tell you their address. People are, look, Google are violating my privacy. And Google are like, no, all this information was there before. Anyone could have found it out. It's like locksmiths keeping how to pick locks secret, because then, the locksmiths could know about it, but then you'd keep it out of the hands of bad guys. But which is what we're describing, the security through obscurity debate, the idea about full public disclosure of security holes rather than keeping them secret and talking to vendors only. It's exactly the same thing, just played out in a different form.
Although what I think's interesting is when you have different technologies coming together to make certain things, particularly. So, for example, the example of the Google being able to type in someone's name and show where they live,
and then look at it in Street View.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's the Street View thing, and the fact that not only could you plot it on a map, but you could also get directions to that person's house and see their house. On a with satellite imagery,
and then no doubt go to Frugal and buy a knife.
And the thing, naturally you could beforehand. I mean, before that, you could go and buy a map, and you could plot the directions yourself. But that would take a lot more time, and I can imagine that's the concerning aspect.
There was a thing. You get classified information, actually properly classified by the government information, and you get secret and top secret and all that kind of thing.
Yeah.
There was an attempt in the early 90s, I think it was, to invent a new... This is in America. To invent a new classification of information called sensitive but unclassified, which was exactly this stuff. Stuff where, in itself, it's... not secret, but if you get it and add it together with loads of other not secret information, you get some secret information.
Yeah, this was in the Cuckoo section, which I only read a couple of months ago. And basically, if you can glue enough non-sensitive information together, you basically got the clues to the sensitive information.
Yeah. I mean, there was an example, I think it was in Texas in the last few weeks, where if you work for the Texas state government, then your salary, members of the public are allowed to request what your salary is, so they can see whether they're getting good value for money off of their state government. This is actually the law. They have to publish it according to Texas state law. I think it's Texas. And when they invented this law, it was 15 years ago, and the way you got the information was you went down to the Texas courthouse and said, I want the information on this person. Now they just say, well, this information was available anyway, so they just stick a spreadsheet on the website. So a lot of the, I think it's Houston or somewhere, the newspapers have been grabbing that information and saying, look, this is how much this department is spending on wages in total and so on. And when people said, but how dare you reveal this kind of information? They said it was all available anyway. You know, anyone who wanted to do this could have done so.
Yeah, so is that necessarily a bad thing then? I mean, it's like if this information was available to anybody who really wanted it, then presumably, you know, if you were a mad stalker, then you would find that find the information on where people live and stuff. Anyway, it's not like
you weren't keeping it secret from the bad guys before. You were just keeping it secret from the ordinary public. Sunlight's the best disinfectant, blah, blah. I mean, Jono's point about how the very awkwardness of getting the information is a roadblock to people. It's not a roadblock to the people you don't want to have it. It's just a roadblock to the punter, ordinary people. I think like most people,
I think it certainly came as a surprise to me about, I don't know, 4 or 5, 6 years ago, when I discovered that in the UK you have to register on the electoral roll for your be registered your property for the voting register, and the voting register is available to companies.
Yeah.
Yes.
Free of charge, I believe. Mm. That's why you get so much marketing shit through your letterbox, and people can glue bits of information together about you and target stuff at you through your letterbox. Not bombs, but, you know.
Absolutely. I mean, and the Americans tend to live more in the glare of publicity than we do about this kind of thing. Like, in America, you can get crisscross directories, a thing where you can look up a phone number and find out where it's the phone number for. But, you can't do that in the UK because, historically, all the numbers were owned by British Telecom, and British Telecom were lunatics about not letting that kind of information out. So nobody produced a crisscross because that information wasn't available.
But there's nothing that would stop you doing it. I mean, you could, if you wanted to, sit down there, type in all the information from the phone book.
And then
put it on a website. You
know? Yeah.
If you were really insane.
You couldn't stick it on a website because that's not public information. But
it's all published in the phone book, though.
That doesn't make it public.
You'd have to check.
Books are published as books. That doesn't make them public information. Absolutely. The thing I think about it is that this is the new world order. You know, we need to get used to the fact that this information's out there. People just haven't adapted.
It's another 2.0 term.
I think, as we've said on the show before, okay. It is the new world order. Google remembers your name. Google remembers your name.
Yeah. I'm going to set up Google.com to see how many people go there.
And
I don't think I want to go to Google.com.
I bet it exists, actually, now that you say that.
Perhaps it's not the best place to go right now.
After the fedora.com problem we had a while back.
But
so, it's one of those things that, like, kind of, yeah, it makes you slightly nervous that all this information is available, but what the heck can you do about it? I mean, there's no...
Do you think...
As you say, it's the new world order. It's like, it's available and it's going to be available and some nutter's going to put it on, you know?
I mean, kind of, you obviously, as the internet has grown and governments and businesses and just people in general have had to adjust to these kinds of things and how technology has changed the way the world's worked, some people have had kind of veiled attempts at kind of restricting how this information can flow. Do you think that with this kind of thing happening, that there needs to be some kind of legislation or some kind of agreement from organisations to not make this kind of available happen? Because something I've thought in the past, actually, is
But perhaps if we had such legislation, we could call it something like the Act for Protection of Data or something. It already exists. That's what the Data Protection Act is in the UK. I mean, I don't know about outside the UK.
But
the Data Protection Registrar, the person who's actually responsible for this kind of thing, is a nutter about making sure that people who are data users, companies and whatnot, are careful with that information.
But the Data Protection Act, I mean, that was in, what, 1985 or something?
I think it's
been updated, I think.
I mean, the Data Protection Act is for the sharing of private data, right? It's not for the fair use of public data.
Yes.
So I don't think that applies. Okay. I'm talking about the fair use of public data, which is what we're talking about. Data Protection Act's got nothing to do with that.
It's highly possible that... I mean, I haven't really thought about this too much until recently. And it is possible that perhaps we need to rethink the way we hand out information that is already... Well, what we hand out data that is currently publicly available.
Yeah. It's exactly what you said earlier on about how, you know, you can create something that's secret by taking lots of relatively innocent clues and put it together. In the same way that the analogy I used earlier on when we were talking about this off air was, you know, you can conceivably go out and buy a bunch of innocent ingredients and put them together to make a bomb. Mm-hmm. But the act of actually making that bomb is illegal. Yeah, the ingredients themselves.
The thing is, the ingredients, they're illegal because, you know, they're all kind of really innocent stuff, like, you know, floor cleaner and things like that.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like magic mushroom.
And it's the same with information. It's all these bits of information, like, you know, the fact that my name is related to a phone number is entirely innocent bit of information. And it's only when you start adding those kind of...
I think where it's interesting as well is that traditionally in our kind of world, in our community, then people are very much on the... People are largely on the side of absolute freedom of information. In many cases, you know, like, I'd imagine, I don't want to speak for the, you know, for the for the EFF or for the Open Rights Group or anything like that. But I could imagine that they'll largely be from the perspective of any kind of restrictions on this kind of information being available would be seen as a seen in a dim view. But to me, there's I don't know, what do we think? I mean, do we think that, you know, using that kind of analogy of the ingredients in the bomb, is that, can we reasonably expect to do that in terms of these separate pieces of information? Because Google essentially is that aggregator of, I mean, they're not only just making information available, they're pulling it together, like the home address and the map thing.
The thing that I didn't realise...
Data mining.
I didn't realise at the time, as I said, when I discovered that my information is publicly available on the electoral roll, I didn't realise that I could actually opt out. I don't think most people do that, realise you can opt out.
Yeah.
And as soon as I realised that it was publicly available and I could opt out, Look Radio Pizza arrives, by the way.
Yeah.
We're all trying to be really subtle about it.
We all felt a disturbance in the force. As soon as I realised that I could opt out and my from having my data publicly available, I opted out. And I think it's perhaps that those opportunities need to be more
better communicated.
That I think is interesting because I don't know what you'd call them, the underground community. There's some people who go to 2600 meetings and whatnot, not proper real underground people, but that sort of thing.
Wombles.
There's always been this this kind of attitude of, you know, no, you keep this kind of information off the net. You find out about opting out things and then opt out of them. You work under a name that isn't your name and so on. You don't want people to make your docs available. And I think a lot of people would have seen them as paranoid and weird 10, 15 years ago. But you get the impression they foresaw the glare of sunlight on all data that long ago and were right to do so. Now, if I decided now I'm going to stop myself being appearing on these things, I'd find it very difficult to back out. Because yes, I mean they're already so
I mean
it is interesting when you talk to people who try and avoid this glare of publicity by operating under a handle when they're on the net or by not revealing their real name and being very careful about addresses and phone numbers getting out and so on, that maybe they were right all along and they weren't the paranoid lunatics we thought they were.
Yeah, it's the fact that all this information is available really that much of a problem?
I mean, personally don't think so.
It is as you were saying earlier, this is the new world order. Basically, it's going to get out. Get used to it. I mean,
to take your bomb analogy, Jono, I think the people who wanted to make bombs, it wasn't stopping them finding out how. It was just stopping Adam finding out how to make bombs.
Yeah.
You know, but Adam wasn't going to make them anyway. The whole point here is that the people you want to keep it out of the hands of knew anyway. It can't hurt to make it more public. Because then people learn. If the ordinary shopkeeper learns what these bomb ingredients are and someone comes in and buys all of them from his shop, then he can think, now hang on, I wonder what you're doing. He'd never have known before. I think, you know.
One thing I find a little worrying is that you know, when I started using the internet, I used to use Usenet a reasonable amount.
Yeah.
And you know, I used to have old websites that I made, you know, like my first couple of web pages and stuff like that, and GeoCities and all that kind of stuff. And I never knew back then that, you know, back then, if you made a web page and you took it off and you basically either deleted it or it went offline or whatever, then back then, that was history.
You assumed it was gone forever.
It was gone. That was the culture of the internet in the mid to late 90s. But now we know that that was all backed up, right? A lot of that's available on archive.org.
Yep.
And so the expectations back then and the expectations now are very different. And that, to me, that's worrying in itself. Now, that's from a hippie kind of, everything should be all freedom of information, everything. There's no problem with that. But I think for a lot of people, that would be deemed possibly concerning. In the same way that back then as well, Usenet always was a bit of a enclosed community, generally populated by relatively technically savvy people, whereas now, because it's all indexed on Google, anybody can access that kind of information. So back then, you could, this doesn't apply to me, but back then you could reasonably have conversations and act like a dick if you wanted to, and it only be enclosed inside those walls. But now it's all completely indexed.
I think the general principle with the current Data Protection Act and the data that is publicly available is it's like the drug laws in many ways, basically. If you make drugs illegal, then you're restricting people's the opportunity for drugs to become pervasive in society because it's illegal. Whereas, and like people's personal information, which is already publicly available, to retrieve it, you actually have to either physically or verbally approach somebody and say, I would like this information, please.
Yeah.
Whereas if it's just on the internet, it's so easily obtainable. You're lowering the bar to entry. And in effect, like the drug law, you're increasing the amount of people who have access to it who could possibly be loonies.
But is that not... I'm struggling to see where this is necessarily a bad thing. I mean, at some point, you have to trust people not to be dicks, basically.
But
information is there. Please don't do stupid things with it, but there's not a lot I can do to stop you, but because the information needs to be out there.
Yeah, but I think the interesting thing is that when you look at it from the perspective of, and I'm casting a very general kind of brush over people who are interested in open rights, but if you typically hear from a lot of people about open rights, they take a very dim view when information that is private is made publicly available, mm-hmm. right? Hmm. And so, you know, information which is agreed upon under a set of kind of constraints is then those constraints change and it's made available. And this is exactly what's happening here. Back then, the culture of the internet, there was these constraints, and now it's been made available to everybody.
See, I don't think so. I think it was assumed there were such constraints, and there actually weren't. You kind of went into it with an idea in your head that this is all private stuff, really. I mean, no one really thought about it, but I think that it was all public back then. It's just because the public, John Q public, didn't have the technical savvy to get it. You just assume that they never will.
I'm not,
and that's not how it works.
But my point is that rightly or wrongly, I think a lot of people back then were of the view, well, hang on a second, you know, I think back then you could always see that, you know, the internet and technology was going to move forward and things would be better indexed and all the rest of it. But I think people, if you were to ask people back then about what's available now, I think people would be surprised. I think if people would have said, you know, in 10 years or whatever, you'll be able to type in somebody's name and see that and see their home address with satellite imagery on a map, I think people are like, hang on a fucking second.
Yeah. For me, it's all about personal choice. It's up to you to decide whether you're comfortable about this information about you being out there, even though it is already publicly available. And so you ought to have the choice to choose whether it is publicly available or not. As I said, I opted out.
Yeah.
The problem is knowing what information about you is out
just
there.
Very briefly, one thing we have kind of glossed over here is the fact there's a cost-benefit analysis here. Because this information being out there potentially allows bad things to happen, but there's lots of good things that can happen too. Mm-hmm. If you look at, say, upmystreet.com, it allows you to go and punch in an address and find out how much the houses on that street cost and what kind of environment it is, which is really useful if you're trying to buy things. If you restrict information so people can't go and find your house, then you restrict the ability of people to get at that kind of thing.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, this is the thing. It's what I'm saying. Basically, you can't stop this information being out there. You just have to trust people not to be dicks with it. I mean, I don't see what else you can do. So, no emails this week, and it's the end of the show.
That's really not the case at all.
No,
I thought you'd have got this formula by now.
One or two emails, perhaps.
Yes, just the odd one. Who's starting to read these?
I believe the closest to the screen ought to start reading.
That'll be me, then.
Speak on, Mr. Bacon.
Now, we've had something of a deluge of wonderful emails from you all regarding the fact that Lug Radio is stopping and we've decided to stop the show and pursue our life of heroin. So, Mr. Ben, community hero, twice community hero, has sent us a rather nice email. He says, "Dear large gents, I felt it would be appropriate for me to send one final email before it's all over."
This is him pitching for the Community Hero Emeritus Award in the last show, I suspect.
"Lots of people have been blogging about the end of Lug Radio, myself included, but I wanted to say one thing that I don't think has been said enough. Thank you.
Aww.
Thank you for bringing something completely new and completely unsurpassed into the world of Linux and free software podcasts." Shut up!
He's just creepy. He wants another free t-shirt, doesn't he?
"Thank you for not compromising on your standards. High quality audio, low quality humour, lots of swearing. Thank you for introducing hundreds of people to podcasting and to Linux. Well, Ubuntu. Thank you for being fucking funny. Thank you for the Chinny Raccoon. Thank you for an expo that wasn't knee-deep in corporate bullshit and didn't cost the world. Thank you for building a community where a Muppet like me can be a hero. Thank you for all the memories, Mr. Ben."
That's really nice. He's a community hero for a reason. He's a good guy.
Because he sucks up to us. Yeah.
Well, possibly.
Yeah, that was one of the emails that came in that I read, and it actually made me think, wow, actually, this really actually going to be quite a void in my own life as well.
Do you want me to read the others, or do you want to do them one by one?
Well, I mean, they're just...
These are just snippets.
I mean, a lot of people have sent us emails either saying, please don't end the show, or saying we thought it was... I mean, James Howell said, fantastic show, you are my Unix epoch, which I thought was quite cool.
We're not entirely sure what that means, but it's quite cool.
Right, well, I'm not reading that one, because I don't know what his name is. Crowquack. Is that it? What the fuck is that all about? So, guys, my favourite...
Isn't that stuff, the powder, where you make it into a milkshake?
Crowquack.
Nesquik.
Not something like that.
Right, so guys, my favourite Lug Radio moments. Number one,
yes.
Whether it can walk or not is another matter. Adam's Spanish phrasebook. I listened to that several times and nearly crashed my car laughing. Number two, but it is the same browser. You might want to turn that down when you mix. Aquasotic Adventures with the National Lottery and their browser support policy. One of my most memorable moments of Lug Radio syndrome. Number three, your shipment of ACK has clearly arrived. The egoless desktop and the red-faced ginger. Number four,
I can't remember what we did in that segment.
You actually nearly turned purple.
Winner.
Number four, the first time I heard your shipment of fail has arrived. Since I test software for a living, it's now my new rallying call. Definitely t-shirt material.
We take complete credit for that. The fail blog copied us. They did.
Yeah.
I had a look at the fail blog the other day. I nearly died laughing.
Yeah, it's comedy.
There was one about sports mascots.
Yes,
just a video of the sports mascots just absurdly falling. The first one, I think, was this mascot chasing somebody up the side of the stadium and falling while carrying a tray of drinks and slapping them in some girl's face by mistake as it fell over. You need to bring the emails back.
Yeah, so I was just checking that it's actually recording. where did that go? There it is.
There we go. So, number five, the first time I heard, then you clearly must hate freedom.
We bring lots of culture to the open source community.
Such as the following. Number six, AIDS out of the blue comment about how he likes to use his mirror to look at his bum.
I had forgotten about AIDS commenting on that particular thing. So, AIDS, if you're listening.
I remember personally the moment I saw the show entitled Bald at Both Ends. I did nearly die laughing. Number seven, boot to the spuds is now a favourite phrase.
Winner.
Number eight, the honour bestowed by Jono and Ack with regard to Emacs.
Hooray.
Epic win.
Number nine, the interview with the creator of Everybody Loves Eric Raymond. I don't know which was more funny, the comic strip or that Mr. Raymond is as clueless as he is about his own image.
Oh, blimey.
Number ten, probably the moments of enjoyment I have yet to get from listening to Jono, Ack, Matt and Sparks in season one. It may seem odd, but I've listened to the shows in reverse chronological order, starting with recent episode one, season two. Although the topics aren't newsworthy, the further I venture backwards, the shows are always a joy to listen to. The topics are great and the content is always rewarding.
Thank you.
Cool.
Yeah.
Ah.
Is this actually from the Matt Rivell himself?
Yes. Send us an email.
He says, just a quick note to say congratulations on 4 years of insight, bullshit and genuinely funny comedy.
He says being present for 4 years.
Yeah, I think he just means 3 years and then me, yeah. Of course, that's not the same since that short bloke left. Oh, hang on. What am I saying? Adam's still on the show.
Ah. Thank you very much for that. And let's just not forget this is the actual Matthew Rivell that was presenter on this show.
Yes, yes. And he's
the only man in the world you look down on.
And he's also going to be at Lug Radio Live. So Matt fans, go to Lug Radio Live on the 19th and 20th of July, and next weekend, in fact. And you can come and get him to sign autographs. We're even bringing a box for him to stand on. We've had an email from Kyle Vanditmars, says, best of luck, Mr. Bacon, in communitizing the community, Mr. Langridge in hating freedom and being ginger, Mr. Sweeten is probably ludicrously technical and boring business venture, and we'll just leave Mr. P alone with his harem of source code. Your indecipherable and interwoven outburst of approximately 85 people talking at once will be sorely missed.
Thank you.
I did like that one.
Oh, right, an email from someone called Dan Fish, which seems implausible. There you go. It says, on a personal note, my son was born a year ago and for long periods had bloody awful colic. He would only sleep in the day if being walked around the streets of South London in his pram.
That's terrible. I heard he had a haddock as well.
Shut up. I found your podcast during this time and listened to it help me while away the time while I walked. The colic naturally settled, and I found myself making excuses to take the pram out to catch up with the old shows. In one sleep-deprived moment, I actually exited the house with the pram, but without my son. He says, before social services get involved, his mum was looking after him. Yeah, right, you left your son in Debenhams. Right? Oh, what? No, that's not anybody's name.
Apparently so.
I've got to read thank
you, Dan Fish.
And also thanks to Mr. Roger Knobfondler.
Why do I not think?
It's unlikely, isn't it?
I think it's
I thought Dan Fish was a bit of a reach, to be honest with you. Roger Knobfondler is just a bridge too far.
So, gentleman and lady, and as Jono has already pointed out off air, that he reckons the lady is me. Fucking delighted. I was most distressed to hear of the impending demise of your show. I'm an enormous fan. Wow. Do you get a crane to lift him out of his house? Like fucking, what is it? Some dude out of a film's mum. Never mind. Moving on. What? Sorry, this is just my own world. And we'll probably miss it for a couple of weeks after it finishes.
Right, that's okay.
But I'm more worried about Hashlug Radio. What are those dweebs going to talk about now? I particularly enjoyed your segment on the network driver last week. It was most fascinating, particularly about the memcopy and IO CTLs. I also enjoyed that bit where you were funny. That was rather...
Which season was that in?
That was rather good, and I laughed and laughed until I stopped. Don't worry about what that other lot say about your show. I don't think you sound like at all like Bert and Ernie. Well, mostly not. Anyway, they swear far too much and most of the time I can't make out what the fuck they're going on about. Oh. Anyway, I have to get back to the hating freedom, so copy later, Roger Knobfodler.
Well, thank you, Roger. Yes.
Okay, the next one is from Christian Holm. He was always sending emails. How many?
He is.
He's like his third or fourth email we've
read.
He's
the one
who's
always sending emails about how much he loves Emacs.
He is, yes. He is. Maybe he's just written an Emacs script to write emails for him. When Lugradia's final breath is taken and all seems lost, on the last exhale, what would you see as the Lugradio faithful can do to make a difference in open source? Rearrange those words into a coherent sentence. Sorry, I misread that. But
Is that an exercise for the reader?
Yeah, I'll do that as an exercise. What would you see the Lugradio faithful do to make a difference in open source?
Yeah.
Question?
That's I don't know. What would we see the Lugradio faithful do?
I can read some more while you think about it.
Read
some more while we
think about
it.
As the show has progressed, Ack and Jono have often debated on quite a wide variety of topics and probably made listeners think hard on certain subjects. Even seeing situations in a different light perspective, whatever you British say. Apart from all the laughter, heated discussion and musical analogies, what do you want the Lugradio faithful to remember you by? And what values to act upon when times require action? No killing and wearing skin to sabotage something in the name of open source, mind you.
Ha!
Miguel is safe.
So what
I think more people should kill him, mate.
What would we see the Lugradio faithful do to encourage use of open source?
Well, I guess as we were discussing earlier, if anyone could come up with a single shot solution to the patent system, that'd be quite handy.
I just think the Lugradio community need to stick together and just keep doing what they're doing now. Yeah. Talking about stuff. There's a really nice group of people out there who just get on really well, and interesting things have come about because of it. I mean, Lugradio wouldn't have got to the point where it's got to now if it wasn't for that group of people. And just because the show's ending, I mean, this is something that we've been talking about because a few people have mailed us and said, the forum's going away, the IRC channel going away, you're going to stop mirroring the show. And it's like, no, it's all staying online.
Absolutely.
We're going to be stopping doing the show, but that doesn't mean that all the content's going to go away and we're absolutely...
No,
we're still going to be in the Lugradio community. It's just that you're not going to be getting an hour and a half of drivel every 2 weeks.
Maybe a good thing.
Yeah, this could actually be a positive move for everybody.
I'd like people to actually go out and maybe create their own podcasts or create their own kind of do something.
It should also...
If there's 8 or 10 different podcasts come out of the Lugradio community... If 90% of them are trapped, that's still one good one. You know?
It should also be noted that a few people emailed us and asked if we could do a Doctor Who and get other people to come and record Lugradio under the Lugradio name. To which point, we basically exploded.
No, that ain't happening. We'd like to keep Look Radio as the way it has been so far. Yes. You know, it's and the legacy to remain as it is.
Conquer, absolutely. Mm-hmm. In terms of doing things, stick together as a community, but make stuff happen. I mean, the thing Chris said, do something.
Yeah.
Don't just sit and wait for other stuff to happen, you know. It's you all.
Anyone to do what we do, which is quite sappy to admit.
Yeah. But, it's you all who make the difference.
Absolutely.
I have to read the end bit of this email, which just says, thanks a fucking bunch for Load Radio. I'll miss my fortnightly dose of Ak, Jono, and Chris, the only sane one of the group.
And Adam. Bastard. He says that. You've got my name on his email.
I just wanted to leave it as Chris, the only sane one of the group.
I was actually reading this, trying to work out whether I could be the only sane one of the group and you were just the guy that was mentioned before me.
No, he means me, the sane one of the group.
We only got Chris in for the looks, so...
God.
We've had a mail from Matt Ashton. He says, I have a question about contributing. I've heard your show debate on...
Just before we go on then, so that's the collection of... We got loads of other emails from people saying,
yes,
don't end the show. It was
very
and we read them all and we appreciate it all. Thank you very much, all of you.
Yes, thank you. And all the blog entries and stuff as well. And I'm sure, I mean, we've all received a lot of personal email as well from people just saying thanks for doing it. And mainly people saying, you know, all the best with your future endeavors and everything. So people have been really genuinely nice about it. It's taken us all by surprise.
It has, to be honest with you, yes.
We have to think of some worthy endeavours now, don't we? That's the problem.
Right, so now we've finished with the bit where we say how everyone else said we were great. Proper emails. On you go.
Matt Ashton says, I have a question about contributing. I have heard your show debate on whether the ability to code or not should qualify you to use open source. But isn't using open source contributing? Every site that is visiting leaves a signature that says you are using open source, and that gives a message to people. Also, my website, I did all of the HTML and graphics using Linux. I used Kate for the HTML and GIMP for the graphics. I also uploaded and edited all of my photos using Digicam, and maybe Picasa for some. www.mattashton.com. I came up with the idea and made the site. It was the idea that it's your homepage, Matt. Interesting.
I had that idea too, actually.
That's a new one, isn't it? I think that just by having my website up, I have contributed to open source. Maybe not as openly as some, but for anyone who is curious enough to find out. Cheers. I don't think that just using open source is contributing. It's kind of showing that you're a user, which is a good thing, but I wouldn't necessarily put that in the same...
I think he has a fair point about if you visit sites and you're using Firefox or Tonka or something, it'll then get logged in their logs and they'll look at their usage stats and say, oh, yeah, now 25% of people are using open source.
It's a pretty
that's a reasonable point. It's not a huge contribution.
I think it's a pretty passive effort, though, isn't it?
It's kind of like saying that you're contributing to the Earth because you breathe oxygen.
The flip side of it, though, is that if you just want to use it, you don't have to contribute.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
You know, don't feel like you're somehow a lesser person because you have not contributed to a project. If you don't want to contribute, what you want to do is just use things, be happy, and get on with stuff, then that's fine, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'd say that it's not really a contribution, but it's certainly something you should be doing. I mean, it's something that helps the cause, but it's probably not necessarily in the same...
It helps the cause...
Well,
but
it
isn't
does.
A contribution.
I don't think it's... I think a contribution is kind of like a concerted effort to do something. Whereas I don't think using open source is a concerted effort.
He's making a concerted effort to use open source for the stuff that he's doing.
Well,
he did all the graphics in the GIMP. He wrote the stuff on Linux, in Kate.
Yeah, but I don't know. I mean,
he just said at the beginning about kind of coding. You don't have to be a coding. Just using it... can be a contribution.
I guess it is.
If you then take it further, I mean, if he writes up kind of how he did all of this stuff,
that would be a very good contribution. Yeah, I mean,
he wrote it up, that definitely. And if his website's talking about open source,
and
that's
to some extent,
a contribution.
It's not, to some extent,
don't
he
have
has,
to be coding.
Yeah, to some extent, he has written it up. I mean, he's written that down, sent it to us.
Yeah, now that's a contribution.
Yeah, that thing you've written down there, Matt, stick it on mattashton.com.
Yeah, it might already be there.
It might already be there.
Should we go and have a look at his website?
Yeah, go and have a look at his website. mattashton.com. This would be good.
To talk about yourself a moment while we find a
Matt Ashton, ashton.com.
Terrific goat porn.
Oh, it plays music.
I imagine Matt Ashton wasn't expecting this bit.
Well, you know.
This is where we find it's fucking. It's where we play Matt Ashton. This is where we play Matt Ashton's patented music, copyrighted music.
Matt,
I hope he's got the license for this piece of music.
Biography.
We've just outed a guy for robbing music on radio.
Oh, is that him?
Cool bed. Sorry, we're looking.
This is so unvisual.
Yeah, it is. We're flicking through Matt Links. Ashton's website. Links. Who does he link to?
Matt Ashton's MySpace, LinuxMusicians.com, Ear Music,
LinuxMusicians.com.
I'm assuming this is him playing.
Ah, well, in that case, we apologise sincerely, and yes, you are, of course, indeed allowed to use this music.
Good man, Matt Ashton.
That's cool. So he put together that site, built it all on Linux. So. Nice one. Stick something on there about how you did that.
Yeah. Right.
Pew, pew, Ian McHugh, Cuthbert Dibble and Grub writes in. It's not my email, I just wanted to say that.
Oh, right, okay. I'd say, hey guys, as a cynical sysadmin, I feel the need to point out that it's very simplistic to argue that sysadmins suffer from cynicism of brands. It's true that for some there is one true way and everything else is rubbish, but these people aren't the majority. Many sysadmins I know would be open to trying something new if there was evidence of a gain for all the effort. As a sysadmin, you've invested a lot of time and effort into becoming very familiar with the quirks of particular distributions and tools. You may even have built up an internal documentation base for them, and you're loath to spend time, effort, and possibly money evaluating something different when you don't have upfront indications they'll be any better. In my case, I look after a variety of standalone and clustered servers running Debian, SUSE Linux Enterprise Server, and Red Hat, adding up to over 500 machines. The last thing I want to do is to introduce something which is an extra management overhead into the mix without a good reason.
Yep.
Also, you run into two other important factors. Due to the longer-term enterprise acceptance of Red Hat and SUSE Linux, they've become a requirement for many major ISV packages and third-party support programs.
Yeah.
Ideally, I'd run Debian on everything, but it's a non-run on some of my freedom-hating systems. In addition, they've become part of that magical best practice IT management formula where innovative, well-engineered solutions are replaced by copying people who manage not to fuck up. Remember that ultimately for a lot of sysadmins, it's a case of culpability, not responsibility. And when the company email system fails, it'll be their spuds wedged in the boss's door.
Which I think is entirely true. That last bit.
I think it makes a lot of other points.
Now, you see, that's interesting right there. And you had the two sysadmins, Adam and Chris, nodding away during that. Yeah. That, to me, sounds a lot like... I'm cynical of new brands, which is exactly what we were saying. You know, I don't trust new brands because no one's proved to me that they're going to work. I'd rather stick with the tried and trusted stuff that I know. But that's exactly what we said sysadmins were like. I mean, it wasn't necessarily denigrating what you do, but...
Well, I think you were denigrating. You were definitely denigrating.
Okay, yeah, it was denigrating. But there, I mean, he says, I don't think sysadmins are cynical of brands, and then goes on to describe how he's cynical of brands.
We're not cynical of brands. That's what you're saying. It's not the brand that's the problem. It's the fact that it's untried and untested. It could be anything. Mm-hmm. It could be not a brand. It doesn't, you know.
I think he's basically just saying you have to be careful. It doesn't matter who it's from.
I think the difference is you can divide everything into... You divide all the server stuff into three categories, really. There's the tried and trusted stuff that you use. There's exciting new branded stuff. And exciting new unbranded stuff. And you haven't heard of any of the exciting new unbranded stuff because there's no marketing brand. So the only stuff you've heard of that you're not using is new branded stuff. That's what I mean.
I'm going to leave Chris to argue with you over this one, frankly.
Oh, thanks. I don't think that's necessarily true. I mean, if you... Yeah.
I suffered a personal case of inertia, I'm afraid. Don't mean to be rude. What the fuck are you doing over there?
Sorry, Jono is currently taking your part, Mr. Potato Head.
In the middle of the email segment, Jono is tearing Mr. Potato Head to pieces.
Because what are you doing? Stuffing things up its arse.
It's just a lot more interesting than what you guys are talking about. I just figured, you know.
By the way, at this point, you can look at the email now because there's a PS for you.
Yeah.
PS,
Jono might be glad to know I occasionally span a whack a few Ubuntu Hardy servers and they perform admirably.
So
well done.
Good man.
You may put away Mr. Potato Head and proceed with the next email.
You missed a bit where he doesn't use any of them, though, because they're new.
Hmm?
Next email.
Oh, that might be the last email by the look of it.
It is the last email.
Get me wrong. I think the cynicism and brands thing is interesting. Well, it was interesting back in that show. But yeah. Nothing's changed on the Lug Radio team, from what I can tell. We, Ak and I, still have our
still
opinion.
Wrong, yes.
And the two losers in the corner still have
still
their
right.
opinions.
Yeah.
We're out of emails. I think we should talk about Lug Radio Live.
Briefly, yes.
Lug Radio Live is next weekend.
It's 20th of July.
When you listen to it, it's this Saturday.
Yes.
Yes.
So Saturday and Sunday. Now we should note a few times because we haven't particularly publicised the parties. and what's going on so much. So on the Friday night in the Hogshead on Stafford Street or Stafford Road, one of the two, in central Wolverhampton, is going to be the Lug Radio party, or the pre-party, which is at 7:30 p.m. Get into the Hogshead. You'll see a bunch of...
You'll spot the bad hair from a mile off.
So you'll see, you know...
Often we're out the back in the courtyard to the...
Yes.
Go to the back and do it. Go to the right-hand
side. So come and hang out with us. And then on the Saturday, the event kicks off at 10:30 in the morning.
Doors open at roughly 10:30. They might open a little bit before that.
The Lighthouse in Wolverhampton on Friar Street. And then... Importantly, Lug Radio Live and Unleashed, the very, very last episode of Lug Radio, is going to be recorded at 5 p.m. on the Saturday. And then we'll kick you out after that show, and then we're going to have a party that kicks off at 8 o'clock, where I believe there's going to be a DJ and possibly, I've heard rumours of karaoke. That's going to be at the Lighthouse as well.
Despite the karaoke.
Despite the fact we'll have Jono being rather drunk and then singing I Am the One and Only by Chesney Hawkes, you should come along regardless, and he tries to deny it and fails.
Anyway, all the stuff about how to actually get to the Hogshead and how to get to the Lighthouse is on the Lug Radio Live UK website, which is lugradiolive.org/...
What?
Lugradiolive.org. What the fuck am I on about? Lugradio.org/live. And if you then click the travel tab, you will see the travel shit.
Yes, and also there's going to be loads of stuff on the Sunday as well, which kicks off at, again, 10:30, or possibly 11 o'clock, depending on which way you look at it.
You get out of bed.
And there's usually an informal get-together on the Sunday night as well somewhere, which will...
We've also got... There's a LAN gaming competition.
The
Bite Mark are running, which is quite cool, I think.
Yeah, they're bringing quite an impressive-sounding gaming rig.
Yes.
And they will be providing PCs for you to use if you don't have a machine with you.
They've got competitions during the day, and I understand for Matt Block at Bite Mark there will be prizes.
All right, okay.
Prizes.
There will be prizes.
Hello there, how are we doing?
So if there's a PC there for you to use if you don't have a laptop. If you do have a laptop. You will be able to just walk up and plug in and join in. I forget which games they're playing off the top of my head, which is a bit shit, because we probably should have announced it in this show.
NetHack?
BZ?
No, it's
not. Oh no, I've been killed by Asterix.
Gong Thong.
Gong Thong is happening as well.
Yes.
You may be surprised at who's going to be in the thong. We are surprised at who's going to be in the thong.
At this point, yeah.
You have to wait and see.
But yes, come along with a 5-minute talk prepared in your head. And then we'll put you up on stage and make you talk about it.
We'll probably have somewhere for you to write this talk down so that we know about it when it comes for putting a man in a thong and calling you up onto the stage.
Yeah.
The other thing is that the whole... I should have turned my phone off, shouldn't I?
Yes.
The other thing is that the whole shebang costs just a fiver. So come along, and you're also going to get nutsack with some free goodies.
There's no pre-registration. Just turn up on the door.
Yep.
Saturday morning with your fiver. Or Saturday afternoon if you insist on missing the first couple of talks.
Yeah. It's going to be... And of course, the other thing to remember is that I said earlier on, it's the last ever show. So
it is last ever show of Lug Radio.
You know, we've got a lot of the regulars from the Lug Radio community coming along. It's going to
be a bit of a party, basically.
Yeah, it's going to be nice to go out with all of our friends. Yeah. So
there is one other thing I would like to say at this point, which is that we've had loads of artwork done for Lug Radio Live. We had the programs and we had badges and loads of other things, and that was all done by Mike Evans. And I would like to say thank you, because I keep rushing stuff over to him and say, Mike, can you do this? Can you do this? Can you do this? And he has accepted it all with the greatest equanimity. So thank you very much, Mike. We applaud you absolutely.
I also want to say a big thank you to Mike, because he's also helped me with all the Severed Fifth stuff while he's been doing the Lug Radio stuff as well. So he's not just been helping out Lug Radio.
Very busy.
He's really,
helped
an awful lot with the stuff that we've been doing. So
didn't you do the lugradio.org website layout as well?
He did, yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. No, he's...
Basically anything art-related...
Anything at all
ever
art-related
has always been him.
Has been done by Mike, and he is superb, and he deserves a round of applause and all of your thanks.
Yes.
And he's not coming. We were hoping we'd we hope we get everyone in the building to buy him a beer, and then he can't make it.
Yes, yes.
I'd also like to make a small nugget of advertising, which is not something we commonly do.
New business.
This is your new business
idea. No.
Like, SweetViagra.com.
No, shut your face.
SourViagra.com.
I'd like to say thank you to Matt Block from Bite Mark, who is obviously sponsoring the event, as are Linux Magazine, and so are
Efficient PC.
Efficient PC.
Yes.
So thank you, Matt Block. Thank you, Dale from Efficient.
And thanks, Hans Jürg.
That's a £4.50 name he's got, isn't it?
Brilliant, isn't it?
Hans Jürg.
It's just Jürg. Brilliant.
It sounds incredibly metal, doesn't it?
And also thanks to Laura and Tony, who have been recording us today, videoing us today.
Hello.
Say hello.
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 Hello. And also... Yay!
Where that, Tony?
This is the internet's Tony Whitmore, famous these days for the Ubuntu UK podcast.
We love the Ubuntu.
In fact, Laura from the Ubuntu UK podcast.
Yeah.
Yeah, Jono loves the Ubuntu UK podcast.
We have quite a few people asking us if, you know, in the light of Log Radio finishing, we're going to sacrifice our beliefs and our stance to kind of steal what's left of your market share that will be drifting across. We're not going to do that. Although we have decided to rename as the Ubuntu UK fucking community podcast.
Nice. Oh,
Bacon is owned by Tony. Live on.
Hey, that's the way it works.
So, winner. Right, yeah. So,
yeah.
Are we done?
I think we are.
It's going to be weird not being... This is the last one in this room, you know?
It is.
This room has been...
disgusting.
This room has been knee-deep for 4 years.
Absolutely disgusting.
This room is... We've spent a lot of time in this room.
Today.
Shut up,
Laura. Naked.
How many studios have we been in? Just two?
Two.
I have to point out that the walls used to be white, now they're brown.
It's not that bad.
It's disgusting.
It's
in
not
here.
That bad. It's disgusting because of Adam.
It's not disgusting because of Adam.
I'd like to draw your attention to several occasions where we've actually had to open the windows because of you, Jonathan Bacon.
Not least of which the fact
you are one to talk, Adam.
Well, I don't do it in the studio commonly, though.
Not
the
least.
The difference is that most people, Adam Sweet, is that when they feel that they have some kind of...
I don't believe this is something the listeners need to hear about.
Some kind of flatulence... Well, you started it, right? Some kind of flatulence problem. Adam decides that it's all in the presentation, that we need some kind of, maybe some kind of dance. And he literally kicks it out.
Yeah,
there's actually been times when he's done a Billy Elliot style jump to shake it out.
So anyway, this has been, unfortunately, the last episode of Lug Radio that's going to be recorded into this studio.
In this studio, but yes. not the last episode of Lug Radio.
We're not even having this fight again.
Why not?
This is the last ordinary episode of Lug Radio, which I assume you would agree with.
Yes.
So let's leave it at that.
Hang on a second. Was that Ack actually trying to agree to
disagree? As opposed to pulling your
That's
head
been really
into the
weird
desk.
Today. Is somebody replaced? Is he being replaced with a robot or something? Personality's completely changed.
See if I ever try mediating for you lot again. It's not. This is the last episode of Lug Radio. Next weekend is Lug Radio Live. We will see you there. Jono, shut up. 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 You're always wrong. Shut up.
Right. His brain.
It's his new Web 2.0 friends.
Apart from people who are coming to Lug Radio Live, gang. That was it. That was us. Thank you very much.
It's been emotional.
It's been more than emotional.
It's been something I did.
It's been something I did every other Wednesday.
You know what, right? Who was it who decided to get him on the show? I don't remember actually wanting him on the show.
Well, it was you who rang me up.
I think I picked the short straw, to be honest with you.
Yeah, he did. Actually.
He really was the best.
If you didn't want me, you didn't have to ring me and ask me.
I thought we cancelled it. Yeah, because we asked Hans Reiser first.
He couldn't make it.
Among other things, he really dug the show.
Oh, dear me.
Dun, 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 dun,
bow.
InstantRimshot.com. Why are you there?
I don't think I'm going to go to that website.
No, it's funnier than you'd think it is.
I'm not going to say that either.
Right, we probably ought to shut up and fuck off for the last time.
All right, we'll see you at Lug Radio Live. If we don't see you there,
Enjoy
the Linux Action Show.
Enjoy Linux Outlaws.
Linux Outlaws with Dirk Schnurkelberger and Rob's
Dan Hubcap Thief, whatever his name is. They're actually going to be at Lug Radio Live.
I'm
looking forward to that, although possibly not looking forward to bringing my car there.
What's the website with all the great big list of podcasts on Linux?
That's Linux Link Tech Show.
No, it's not Linux Link Tech Show dot anything. It's TLLTS.net, is it?
It's either the Linux Link .net or TLLTS.info, but I think they're linked from one to the other.
Link.
So don't take the piss out of the Linux Link Tech Show.
The Linux Link.
So, I mean, you've got them and Linux Outlaws and Linux Link Tech Show.
And Ubuntu UK.
And Ubuntu UK. Yes, wave, Tony and Laura.
Because everyone can see.
No Fedora UK, is there? No.
There is a KDE podcast.
Is there?
Yeah, there is. So
is that a podcast?
All you K KDE complainers can go and listen to yourselves. I wasn't supposed to be booting this, but I'll just say there is.
How is all of you KDE complainers not going
to
be a booting?
Well, they always complain to us, don't they? Because we always get everything wrong. So anyway, Linux. is it Linux Link, Tony? Because Tony was nodding at me. Linuxlink.net.
I think it's thelinuxlink.net.
It's a great big list of copies, Tony, open source podcasts.
Something will come up.
Yeah, so go and listen to the shows, and we'll speak to you soon.
Don't Google for Linux podcast, because we're still top hit for that, I think. Or we might not be anymore.
Actually, we won't speak to you soon as well.
No, I was just thinking that. We'll speak to you next week, and then we won't speak to you again.
And then,
aren't you lucky?
We should do a reunion tour.
What, like 10 years?
Matt did say in 2015 we should do a reunion tour.
Should we do it?
With our Zimmer frames and that.
I don't think you're supposed to break up planning to do a reunion tour. That's not how it works.
No, Ozzy doesn't.
Ozzy's done now but reunion tours since like 1972.
In his defence, he's about 600 years old.
He's a fucking Yoda with long hair, isn't he? So I think we've strung this out enough now. I think we should probably say goodbye.
Take care.
Say goodbye. Fuck off, press stop.